We're going to be in Psalms 105. It's a big chapter, and we're not going to get all the way through it because I'm not a good preacher. And I'm like, I can only do a few verses. And it's going to be 1 through 5, and I want to read this, and then I'll give context. It'll be fun. Oh, give thanks to the Lord. Call upon his name. Make known his deeds among the peoples. Sing to him. Sing praises to him. Tell of his wondrous works. Glory in his holy name. Let the hearts of those who seek the Lord rejoice. Another way of saying that, let the hearts who seek him have joy. Seek the Lord and his strength. Seek his presence continually. Remember the wondrous works that he has done, his miracles, and the judgment he uttered. We'll stop there for now. I think since I've moved to Chicago, I have had to host a lot of people. People want to come visit this city. When I lived in tiny town St. Joseph, where all you can do is push over cows, nobody visited. But now everybody visits. And we have visitors right now, but we're not hosting you. Those are my friends. Heather's hosting them. But what happens when you host somebody? It kind of interrupts your life. They're in your space. They're in your kitchen. They're in your bathroom. Man, they're in the bathroom a long time. Me and my wife, like especially when you're hosting a stranger, that's the hardest. Because when you're mad at your wife or your kids and you go in the bedroom, you're like, why aren't these kids so crazy? Ah! And then it's our kids. And then we're like, oh yeah, they're always this crazy. And then you feel like a terrible parent. But the main thing is when you host someone, it's disruptive to your life. And when I think about it, think about if you could host Jesus into your house. Like give him a spare room. If you don't have a spare room, could he sleep in bed with you? Hey, Jesus, how you doing? It wouldn't get weird, but you might feel a little uncomfortable. The point is like when you host somebody, it disrupts your life. Think about hosting the Lord of the universe in your house. I mean, what conjures up in your mind? Do you see him at the door going, I know what you're doing in there. I know what you're thinking. Or do you imagine something entirely else? What I think would happen is very quickly you would know if he's just hosted for a few days or if you'd want to host him for your whole life. Because that's the challenge. Jesus says he's knocking at the door, so it's not just letting him into your life. It's letting him rule your life. It's not letting him into your house as a host. It's letting him rule the house. There's this unspoken rule I feel with like hosting. Like when I get hosted, I don't go through the bedroom and look through the drawers, you know, go through the closets. It's like that would be super creepy. I've never done that, thank the Lord. But the reality is, are there rooms off limits to Jesus in your life? Are there drawers? Are there things where you go, you can be in the living room, Jesus. You can be in the dining room. But these rooms you can't be in. The reality is Jesus is meant to not only be brought into our life, but to envelop it, be the foundation, and everything is submitted to him. So, would you actually want to host Jesus? Yes. Would you want him to be Lord of your house, Lord of your life? That's a different question. And that's the harder question. I love this verse. It says, seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon his name while he is near. There are moments to move closer. There are moments to draw closer. There are moments not only to open the door, but to say, hey, come in this room and clean it up. Come in this room and clean it up. And this passage in Psalms is exactly that. This is wild. Psalms 105 is them bringing the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem. This is God's presence, dwelling presence. And the reason this is so unique, because for 70 years, over 70 years, it had been neglected. God's presence had been neglected. And Saul neglected it his whole reign. And so David was bringing the Ark of the Covenant to Jerusalem. And then what happens is they were doing it a little bit haphazardly. It was on like this little cart that was wiggly. And then the ark wiggled off. And then Uzziah tried to keep the ark from falling. But the ark is the presence of God, the holiness of God. And as soon as Uzziah touched it, boom, he dies. And David's like, dang, this thing is beyond me. And so then he calls his buddy Obadiah. Yo, Obadiah! Wait, is that his name? Yeah, yeah. Obadiah, I need your spare room. I got the ark, it's scary. And so he brings it to Obadiah's house for 3 months. And then Obadiah puts it in his spare room. And then what starts to happen in Obadiah's life? Blessing, blessing, blessing. Here's the report. The Lord blessed Obadiah and all his household. See, God's presence is the source of blessing. And Obadiah didn't receive this blessing by chasing after it. He received it by hosting the presence of God. So this is what we learn. When you make room in your life for God's presence, you get more of God, and then everything else follows. You got to remember, you get more of God. That's the important part. So David heard this report, and then he goes, I don't just want this in my city, I want God in my life. Because he saw Obadiah's example. I mean, we see this in Psalms 27 when David says, one thing I've asked of the Lord, that I will seek after, that I may dwell in the house all the days of my life, right? To gaze upon the beauty of the Lord. That's what David wanted. And so he's like, get the ark here. And so they bring it in, and David bringing it to Jerusalem is symbolizing a restoration of God's rightful place at the center of Israel's life and worship. This is a moment to move closer. Seek his strength, seek his face always. So it goes back to the question, like, would we be like Obadiah and be like, yeah, bring him in? I mean, he would have heard the report, this just killed a man. Bring it in my house where my kids are. I mean, when we really think about God who said, let there be light, boom, and it all happens, like that then dwelling with you, and now the New Testament says we are the temple of the living God. So he now dwells within us. And we just throw that away. We think, ah, da, 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 da. But like if we really dwelled on that, that could shape us beyond our imagination. It doesn't just help us get rid of sin, it changes our life. If we would dwell on the God's presence is in me all around, not just in my house. So I remember this guy, his name's Chris Silcott. Sean knows him, Alyssa. He's an elder at our old church. I did like interviews with all the Jesus people. Jesus people were back in the 60s, 70s where God was moving. And in our old church, there was a bunch of them that had been changed by God. So I was asking this guy, Chris, about it, where he was like, yeah, it was crazy in the schools. People were just like reading their Bible and praying through the hallway, and people were just getting touched by God. It was crazy. I said, what was it like for you? And he's like, Parker, I resisted, unfortunately. He's like, but you could talk to this person, this person, this person who didn't resist. And he was a bit like bummed out, because I think we need to figure this out, where are we living a life where we're resisting the presence of God because we're scared of what might happen, or are we receiving it with open arms? So how do we seek his face? Hebrews 11 is pretty clear. Hebrews 11:6 says, you must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him. You must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him. Do you believe in God? Yes. Do you believe that he actually rewards you as you seek him? Now, what is the reward? I love what Pete Gregg says. Seeking God's face instead of merely his hand, do we want God's blessing more than we want God himself? Prayer is not about seeking the giver more than the gifts. The presence of God is not and means to an end. It is the end. The deepest purpose of prayer is not to get things from God, but to get God. To get him. We're begging, do this, do that. Come on, magic genie. Right? Wouldn't that be funny? Someone comes in your house. Who's this guy on your couch? Oh, that's Jesus. Yeah, he's a part of my life. Yeah, he's here. What does he do? He just sits there. But watch this. Hey, Jesus, I need some help. I feel scared. And then he makes me feel better. It's really nice. But he stays over there. I don't know. I just think sometimes we treat him like this magic genie rather than like, hey, all of you, I give you all. You tell me what to do. You tell me to burn it. You tell me to go. I want you. I want you. I don't want all your gifts. So if you get nothing else today, is Jesus enough for you? And I've been asking myself as I've been preparing this, like, is he enough? And then I also been asked myself, like, if, what if I would seek him like I seek other things? Like, what if the world would seek him like they seek money? I hear about people moving all over the world just to get more money, better careers. Like, take their whole family and move. I hear about people, I know people that just obsess about their health. Huh, that has a carb in it or whatever, and they're just like these people that, my dad, he's hilarious. I love my dad. Dad, I love you. But he's like obsessed with his health. We know these people, right? I mean, go to the beach and you realize people are obsessed with vanity and beauty, staying young, looking good. It's just like we seek these things all the time. And then we ask the magic genie to help us feel better. But we're seeking the wrong thing. I love Matthew's passage where it says that that person, the kingdom of heaven is like searching for a fine pearl. And the merchant found the pearl of great value, sells all that he has to buy that pearl. See, I think we get upset with God because we're mad at him because we feel certain ways, but we've been seeking the world. And so we try to use Jesus, and I say this a lot if you're around me, so I'm sorry, but we try to use Jesus as an addition. We try to see him as an airbag so that we can drive recklessly. Hey, Jesus, thank you for being a part of my life. Your presence is with me. And now I'm going to add you to my life so that I can go wild. Thanks for being an airbag, that optional upgrade. I'm really happy that you're a part of my life. But we see him as an addition rather than the whole thing. And that is a scary reality because I think when I do, when I'm out walking on the street, I realize people always are like, yeah, I love Jesus, but they see him again more as an addition, an add-on. Yeah, he's a part of my life, but not my life. And this is a scary place to be because if he's easily added in, he can be easily taken out. In 1 John 3, he really gives an example about you should never sign a peace treaty with sin. We should not wink or excuse it. Everybody has this in their life. This is my struggle. Jesus gets it. See, a lot of times we do that with sin. We do that with what we're seeking. Yeah, this is just mine. You know, Jesus gets it. He'll forgive me. But John's saying, don't sign that. Don't think you can live for the devil and just abound in works of darkness and just be like, yeah, I'm a son of the light. I'm a daughter of light. So the problem is we're oftentimes seeking the wrong thing. We're building on the wrong foundation. So I love my kids, but kids aren't very smart sometimes. Like if you ever see them play with blocks, they'll start building on ridiculous things. And you're like, that's not gonna stack very high because the foundation's terrible. I think sometimes we're like kids, we're blocks, and we're just trying to stack things that we're seeking, and it just keeps falling. We're like, why is my life falling apart so many times? Well, what's the foundation? Is it built on sand, or is it built on the rock, like Christ says? So we need to seek a life, not just to add Jesus in, but to build upon him. And I think seeking Jesus looks a lot like seeking the world, but in reverse. I mean, doesn't that kind of make sense? We're super good at seeking the things we're passionate about. We become obsessed. I'm like, that person, what is that person? They're just obsessed about this stuff. The same in reverse, where it's like this passage where David's bringing the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem in his whitey tighties, dancing. It's pretty wild. And the reality is when we seek Jesus, when we seek his face, when we seek him with our whole heart, a lot of times it looks irresponsible and naive, like David in his whitey-tighties. And his wife goes, what a foolish man. It also can look inefficient, scandalous, like dumping oil on Jesus' feet. And people go, you're wasting a year's wages, the disciples say. Completely naive and scandalous. It can look selfish, like Mary at the feet of Jesus while her sister's making and serving everybody. You're so selfish, Mary. But Jesus says she chose the right thing. She's at my feet. See, when we seek Christ, there's going to be plenty of people that get mad at you. You're selfish. You're irresponsible. You're naive. You're wasting so much. And the hard thing is maybe we're the people doing that. Maybe we're looking at people feeling irritated. Why are you doing that? Stop doing that. The point is, a lot of us, we feel on the outside of that, we feel, sometimes we see people filled with joy, filled with peace, just at the feet of Jesus, dumping out everything, right? Just dancing unashamedly in their whitey tidies, and we're like, wow, I want to be like that. But it's that's the reality, guys. Like when we seek him with all our heart, it will look oftentimes wild. Thomas Aquinas, guy's a legend. There is within every soul a thirst for happiness and meaning that cannot be satisfied only by God. Augustine, sorry, I've been reading too many people. Great are you, Lord. Greatly do be praised. Great is your power, and your wisdom is infinite. And man desires to praise you, for he is a part of your creation. You have made us for yourselves, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until it rests in you. The reason we're restless, the reason we're hungry, the reason we're thirsty is because we are like David. One thing I have asked of the Lord that I will seek after. We're so thirsty for the presence of God, the face of Jesus, not just the hand of Jesus, his blessing, but his face like a father. Our souls long for that. And so I think the difficulty is a lot of times we're seeking the wrong thing, but sometimes we are seeking him, but then delay happens. Who hates waiting? Amen, hallelujah. I hate patience, but it's a spiritual gift and it's a fruit of the Spirit, so I shouldn't hate it, but it's my flesh speaking. Like the Israelites waiting over 70 years for the ark to be brought back into Jerusalem. I think sometimes we just confuse with delay. We're like, man, Jesus, I feel like I've been seeking you for years, weeks. You haven't answered nothing. You get mad at him. Delay's not always bad, right? I always think this with delay. I mean, what if women had babies in like 6 hours? Be bad, right? You're playing pickleball. Oh my gosh, it'd just be a bad scenario. So like delay's okay in some things. Am I right? Amen, women? I mean, my 9 months probably sucks too, but it'd be horrible. I come home and I'm like, oh, there's a new baby. Okay, great. The point is, delay is producing something. It's a part of making us who we are. It's not what you accomplish, as Dallas Willard said, it's who you're becoming. And in the delays, we're becoming something. We're learning to trust. We're learning to seek. In this psalm, the rest of the psalm, guys, of 105, they're recounting all the wonders God has done. All the wonders. And I think if you're in a time of waiting, you need to start recounting. You need to start recounting what God has done. What God has done. And there is an active waiting and a passive waiting. That's an active way to respond to delay, to that liminal space where you're like, where the heck are we headed? It's not only to remind yourself. Oftentimes you're so in it, you need someone to remind you. This is why community is so important. Sometimes you need people to remind you, just like in the psalm. They wrote this down so it could be remembered by generation and generation, reminding ourselves of what God has done. And this is so important because if you just passively just go through it, it becomes stagnant. But when you think of like plants, they produce fruit, right? You water, you mend, you tend. Roots need to grow down before anything grows up, right? Before anything is seen, roots are growing down. So I think in the waiting, God is doing great things. Again, Augustine, sorry, he's got some good words. By delaying, God stretches our desire. By stretching our desire, he enlarges our soul. And by enlarging our soul, he makes us capable of receiving him. It's almost like seasons when God seems distant. It doesn't mean he's absent. It may feel like that, but I think realistically, he's increasing our capacity to know him and enjoy him. I mean, I feel that so often. And is he worth waiting on? Is he worth waiting on? Is this, I just think we wait on so many other things patiently. I mean, we'll go through years of school patiently because we think of what it will produce. I remember back when PlayStation 2 came out, you'd wait 3 days in line just to get the PS2 or whatever. I didn't do that, but we'll wait. Is he worth waiting on? We got to get past this instant gratification. Like we pick up the word and we're like, oh, I read one verse. I'm so bored. Like we got to get past that. We say a prayer and we think, oh, we instantly need to be satisfied. We instantly need to be gratified. It's not overnight shipping, people. It's not fast food. It's wait on the Lord. That's what the Psalms always say. Wait on the Lord. Is he worth waiting upon? Just quiet and waiting. Everything else can be pushed aside. I'm waiting. We won't wait on him half the time. But I promise you, he says if we wait, this delay is going to produce so much. Be still and know that I am God. Psalms 27:10. And so he's often increasing our hunger before he satisfies it. Again, Pete Gregg, spiritual longing is not a sign that God is absent, but often evidence that he is drawing us deeper. This moment is a delay. For me, has often been the very thing I need to start seeking him. That delay has made me start seeking him and wrestling with him. Which goes on to kind of the next point, which is, oftentimes we get stuck into this delay space, but we need to kind of move to the wrestling state. And this can be challenged, but I think of Jacob, where he wrestles with God, and then all night, this dude wrestles with God. He hadn't even taken jiu-jitsu classes. I don't understand it. And he kind of wins. And remember, he touches his hip, and then his hip gets whatever. Peniel is the place Jacob calls it. And he says, for I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered. Seek his face evermore, it says. I think when we wrestle with God, things that we've been battling with, maybe insecurities, whatever it may be, this is when we oftentimes encounter the face of God. I mean, Jacob encountered the face of God. We see that David, through going to the temple, all the battles he went through, experienced the face of God. And again, this is intimacy. This is longing. Matthew 7, ask, seek, knock. Ask, seek, knock. Ask and it will be given. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened. And we need to be willing to battle. I'm bad at this, honestly. I feel like I'm in the delay and I'll seek him. But anyone else battle really well? I mean, I feel like I don't. Anybody? No? Maybe? You tell me afterwards. But I did jiu-jitsu for a while. The reason I say this is because when I did that, you get annihilated by everybody at first. And you're like, this is so depressing. I'm so bad at this. But then it motivates you like, I got to train harder to be able to beat that guy who's tiny. And I'm not that big. I'm pretty big, but not that big. Don't say nothing, Jones. So, but like you train and it produces this hunger. And I feel like Jacob, he's just like, I won't let you go till you bless me. Like, and then the blessing was, I see his face. I feel like when you're wrestling with God, it just, you think you know what you want, but then it's like God just shows you his face and it changes everything. But the problem is we don't wrestle. The reason I don't is because I'm insecure. I'm insecure that he won't show up. I'm insecure maybe he's not loving. He won't be gracious. I get insecure. And so my default is to do the things I can control. I can have controlled outcomes if I do these things. And so we typically go straight to the things that we can control the outcome because we like control. Versus just wrestling and fighting. Because the real issue is actually trust. It's trust because we trust ourselves a lot of times more than we trust God. Now, maybe you wouldn't say that outright, but your life would model that. That you're trusting yourself and what you can produce more than waiting on the Lord and then also battling and seeing what he produces. So I'm going to do an illustration because I love it. I need three people. Come on, one person who said, yes, Jacob, get up here. Now, Jacob, you're my friend. You're my friend. Second, come over here. The second thing I need is, I love asking this question, who has a blindfold? It's always weird. Somebody usually does, and it makes you creeped out. Like, why do you have a blindfold? Nobody has a blindfold? I've done this before. I've always had a blindfold. Okay, we don't need, you have one. Oh, yes, okay. Yeah, this will work. All right, now, Jacob, I have a question for you. Yes. So if you had to get home, if you had to go home, and you had to be blindfolded to do it, who would you trust to get you there? Okay, come on up, Allie. Come on up, Allie. Now, who is an acquaintance to you? Who do you kind of just know, but you don't like?
Angela,
can you come on up? Wait, yes. Angela, so you know Angela, mm-hmm. but you don't know, she doesn't know where you live and all that, right? Okay. So the point is, like, if I, just blindfold yourself, act like you're blindfolded. It don't matter that much. Here's the point. Jacob's like, I'm gonna do this. Here's the point. So, Jacob, why would you trust, you don't have to do that, that looks so weird, now that I'm doing it. Why would you trust Allie?
Because she lives in the same spot, and she has proven through multiple actions that she cares enough to keep me alive.
Yeah, that's really good. Now, why would you not trust?
Because Angela does not know where I live.
Angela doesn't know where he lives. Plain and simple. Now, here's the reality. I think this is what I'm trying to get the point across. Jacob really trusts Allie because it's his wife, and she knows where he lives. The reason Angela, he doesn't trust her, it's not, she doesn't know where he lives, but also she is more of, again, more of an acquaintance than someone he knows intimately. You guys go sit down, and thank you. The point is this, the reason we have issues trusting Jesus is because, again, we see him more like an acquaintance rather than the dearest person in our life. And why would you ever trust someone you don't know that well? You wouldn't. You trust who you know well. And the reason you don't trust Jesus is because you don't know him that well. Again, he's on your couch, but he's not over your life. You need to know God. You need to know Christ. Not just know of him. What is wrestling for your ultimate foundation? And I want to encourage some of you here is that the good news is this. That Jesus that we try to add to our lives loves you. And he's been in pursuit of you much longer than you've been in pursuit of him. He is seeking you. Jesus says that in Luke 19:10, I came to seek and save the lost. John says, for God so loved the world, he sent his son to find you, to seek you, to go after you. Even after his resurrection, he goes to Mary, who's crying, and he goes, he says her name, Mary. He goes to the disciples' house after the resurrection, and they're behind locked doors. And he goes, peace be with you. He's always seeking you. This is the good news of Jesus. This is the good news of the gospel, that he has been seeking you from the beginning because he loves you. And in return, it's like we turn and say, okay, I want to start seeking him, because what does it say? Seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon his name while he is near. And then it says in Jeremiah, you will seek me. It says, you will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. Guys, we got to realize Jesus loves us so much. He's crazy about us. He really loves us. And he's not inviting us into like a boardroom. He's inviting us more into that living room space of just like being with him, loving him. He loves you and he loves me. Are we aware that he's knocking on the door? Are we aware, like in this psalm, there's this moment where God's presence is almost drawing near, and will you respond? Will you seek him? I love what the Catholics do with contemplative prayer. They say the hour they spend in prayer, they don't pray. This is what's wild. I mean, I'm sure some do. But they're becoming aware of his presence in that hour of prayer so that they can carry the presence throughout the day and pray without ceasing. I love that because, you know, right now you maybe start feeling like you're becoming aware of the presence of God. Like the ark is showing up. I want the ark to show up. I want the Holy Spirit to show up where we feel the presence of God. And maybe that's it. Right now you're becoming aware of the presence of God. And that's what we want. Because that's how we go be the aroma of Christ. That's how we go out and carry the presence with us. and we start praying without ceasing. Because if you're always begging, 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 let's become aware. Let's wait on the Lord. Let's bring the ark in our home, in our lives. And from that presence, everything else flows. Are you aware that he's here right now? Psalms 27 says, when you said, seek my face, my heart said, your face, O Lord, I shall seek. Your face, O Lord, I shall seek. Seek him in your life while you can. Some of you are far from God. You don't know Jesus. Maybe some of you here have realized he's been an added upgrade and an addition, but not your life. Seek him right now while you can. You don't know if you'll make it to your car or to your house. Every breath is grace. We don't know. Seek him now while you can. Turn to Jesus because he's right there at the door. And he's not going to be this one busting through the door. He doesn't make people. He wants you to invite him into your life, invite in his presence. Seek the Lord. Seek his strength. Seek his face. A.W. Tozer says, we are as close to God as we choose to be. And I just want to read that one little verse again in Psalms. Band, you can come up. Glory in his holy name. Boast in his holy name. Let the hearts of those who seek the Lord rejoice. Seek the Lord and his strength. Seek his presence continually.